tweet at Today SOR.
And we're certainly getting a lot of tweets and texts as well. Sean, people must remember we have only one general hospital in County Kerry. This from a very concerned nurse in Dingle. Another one, pity the government didn't protect Dublin people initially by restricting those rugby fans coming in from Italy. It's not just people from Dublin who can't visit the beaches. I live in Mayo, but I can't visit my local beach either because it's more than 2 kilometres away from me. Morning, surely residents who are, if non-residents, are in areas where they're renting homes. It's people's own neighbours who might have rental properties or Airbnb who are putting them at risk. Reference the comment about people renting in Donegal. Greed trumping community needs? Asks Jean in Cork. Now, the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, as we know, has spent a second night in intensive care as he continues to receive treatment for the coronavirus. In his absence, there have been claims of a power vacuum during the UK's biggest crisis in over a generation. On the line now, Edwina Curry, former Conservative MP. Edwina, good morning to you again. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
What are you hearing as to the Prime Minister's condition, or do we know how he is this morning?
Well, we know he's in intensive care. We know that he's had oxygen, but we know that he's not on a ventilator. And that's about it. I mean, these things take time. I think most people recognise that. But he's in the very best of hands. The St Thomas's Hospital, which is right across the Thames from the House of Commons, right across the nearest hospital to number 10 Downing Street, it's one of the best in the world. So I think we're confident.
Yes. At the same time, though, I think there's an acknowledgement that the man is seriously ill, encouraging though it may be if he hasn't needed to be on a ventilator, but that perhaps he should have been in there much quicker than he was brought there.
Oh, who knows? Who knows? I have a feeling that with Boris, you can't always tell him what to do. Which is how he came to be our Prime Minister in very difficult circumstances. And I think everybody is rooting for him. You know, there was a moment yesterday when the person who's standing in for him, the First Minister, Dominic Raab, when he said, look, he's not only the Prime Minister, but he's our boss and he's also our friend. And you realise that actually this is a remarkable man and we're all rooting for him. I mean, trust him to go and want to share the experience of the British people by catching the damn thing. We have to all hope, and if you're a believer, then you pray that he will recover, as indeed you have the same feelings for everybody else who is being cared for in this way.
Yes, I suppose it was the last thing he expected to happen, or he probably felt he could ride it out if he did get a touch of it, and that's what he tried to do. But in any event, let's hope he does make a full and speedy recovery. But in the meantime, in his absence, the Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, is deputising for him. Now, he looked, I think, according to all accounts, and like a man who was shell-shocked, and looking even at the front-page picture of him on the Daily Telegraph today, he looks like a man who wasn't quite expecting this, and you'd wonder whether he's ready for it.
Oh, I'm sure he's ready for it. I mean, he's an exceptionally able man. He lost his father at the age of 12, and so he's had to grow up and be very self-resilient and self-dependent, and I think he's fine. Actually, it strikes me that he's exactly the right person to be deputising as and when necessary. The main role of the Prime Minister during a lot of this is behind the scenes. That's chairing the various ministerial cabinet subcommittees that look at each of the detailed decision-making patterns that are required. There's 4 daily morning meetings, apparently, on healthcare, on the public sector, on the economy and business, and the international response. Well, he would normally be chairing the international response one anyway. And these meetings will continue. They're being done, thank heaven, by virtual. I imagine they're using Zoom or something like that. And then they were looking at progress. The big decision, Sean, that it requires to be taken at some point in the next fortnight is looking at the lockdown. But given the level of numbers in Britain, there's no chance whatever that the lockdown's going to be alleviated anytime soon. By that time, I think Boris is going to be out of hospital and back holding the reins.
Well, that's going to be another question for him and his advisers, whether he can be told, look, take yourself off to Chequers and don't come back out of there for 2 or 3 weeks and stay out of contact insofar as possible. Let yourself recover.
Well, he can stay out of contact, that's fairly easy to do. I think we've all discovered the magics of modern technology. I've done several Zoom conferences. It's absolutely brilliant. You can actually watch people while they pick their noses, and you can see what they've got on their walls and who's got books and who hasn't. I'm sure that they'll be doing all their meetings like that. Especially, you know, one of the things we don't know is how long you stay infectious. With some conditions, you continue to shed the virus or the bug after you have apparently recovered. So he's going to be extremely careful about that.
Yes.
The decisions that will need to be taken have to be based on some very thorough data, statistics and analysis. We're in the process of collecting that information right now and analysing it. I mean, for example, the figures on deaths have always had a lag of a couple of days, but it's been apparent now that some cases we've been lagging quite far behind. So
yeah.
There's been some proper research being done, and as and when we can see the number of cases and the number of deaths beginning to go down, that's when decisions will have to
be
taken.
Yeah, but speaking of data, statistics and analysis, Edwina, there's one piece of analysis out from a group called the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation in Seattle in the United States. And they have some very, very scary statistics and projections. They say that Britain will become the country worst hit by the coronavirus pandemic in Europe, accounting ultimately for more than 40% of the total deaths in the continent. They're predicting 66,000 UK deaths by August from COVID-19, with a peak of nearly 3,000 a day.
That seems to be an outlying prediction, I must say. I mean, at the moment, if you look at the figures, you'll find that Ireland has a higher proportion of cases for its population than we have. And you have to take into account that the lockdown has been widely observed. I mean, there's always a lot of fuss about those people that aren't observing the lockdown and the dangers that some people are running. But by and large, from what I can see, and I go out for a walk every morning with the dogs within this area. I was listening to somebody a little earlier on your program saying, oh, you can't walk to the beach, it's 2 kilometres away. You can actually walk 2 kilometres and 2 kilometres back. But the observation level is very high. We've all had a letter from the Prime Minister. It's come through every single door. An envelope has come through with a letter from the Prime Minister telling us all to behave, with a booklet explaining everything in detail. I think most people understand. There are a few who are being willfully difficult, more than a few that are picking up fines. But I think we realise what we have to do to make sure that this does not spread any further than necessary.
OK, look, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. That's Edwina Curry there, former UK Justice Minister, sorry, UK Cabinet Minister, and also an MP in that country now. We will be talking to Jim Lucy, psychiatrist and professor of psychiatry at Trinity College Dublin after this break.